Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Phoenix Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Good afternoon. This is Jody Lowe with Leadership Lowdown, powered by You and Improved. Leadership Lowdown's a radio series dedicated to shining a spotlight on Valley business leaders and sharing the real stories behind their rise to the top, as well as the truth about what it takes to truly succeed in life and business. And we're here to uncover these leaders' journeys, the pitfalls, the victories, and all of the heartaches and all of the triumphs in between. And today, I am so happy I am sitting across from two people who I truly admire and love and adore, Ms. Drenna Kasari of Lyft. And she's actually the general manager, first female general manager of Lyft. And Mr. Kyle McIntosh, who is the president and co-founder of Mac6, which is an incredible co-working space here in Arizona. So thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thrilled to have you both here. And I'd love to start out, I'll start out with you, Drenna, a little bit about you and your background. And you have an amazing story. I've had the pleasure of hearing you speak numerous times and watching you win numerous awards, very well-deserved awards, I should say. And not only what you do for Lyft and what you've accomplished as a young, bright, vibrant businesswoman in Arizona, but your story and background are incredible. So I'd love to be able to dive into all of those fun things if you're up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again for having me. It's definitely an honor to be here today with you and Kyle.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So a little bit about my background. I grew up in Kosovo, which mm-hmm. is a small little country in Southeastern Europe. I used to be part of Yugoslavia, lived there for the first 17 years of my life. Yeah, you may have heard that Kosovo was definitely impacted by war.
Yes.
So that was definitely a defining moment for me in my life. And then when the war ended, I was lucky enough to be awarded a scholarship to come and attend boarding school for my final year of high school in California, which was really the beginning of the journey for me here in the United States,
sure.
which led to going to college and then starting working.
Wow. So take me back to Kosovo as a young child and teenager. That is not obviously a typical young person's, you know, childhood and growing up. So tell me about that experience. Tell us about that experience.
I love talking about that because the experience there talks about the nature and the adaptability of human beings, which is you really make the most of any situation that you're put in. So I actually remember my childhood being quite happy, despite knowing that there is, you know, always this conflict going on, if not exactly in Kosovo, in the neighboring countries, always, you know, in the news, there is, you know, this conflict that broke out or that conflict that broke out. But certainly for me, my family, it was just always important to make the most out of what the situation was or the time of our lives. And so I definitely, you know, remember having a lot of friends playing out with my neighbors and people from school, going on vacations, regardless, you know, how fancy or not fancy they were, things like that.
Yeah. So good memories in a very turbulent time to
Precisely.
Grow up to. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so then you grew up there, your family is there still or?
Yeah. So my siblings and, mm-hmm. and my mom, my dad passed away last year living in Kosovo.
Yeah. And did you have the opportunity to see them much or did they make it out to the States?
Yeah. They've all visited here many times. My parents used to come every year and I make it a priority to visit at least once a year.
Good.
Sometimes
Good.
More often than
that's
that.
That's quite a trek. That's a big trip.
It is. It's also important. So my husband is also from Kosovo and it's important for us to make sure that our girls know where we come from to expose them to that,
sure.
to that, you know,
the
part
culture.
Of the world, the culture and just, you know, how different things are there.
Yeah, absolutely. Get a little in touch with their heritage and roots mm-hmm.
and the language.
You then moved to the States. You mm-hmm. went to California, you said.
That's right.
And so you were awarded a scholarship and then on to college. I believe you went to Occidental.
I did, yes.
A dual major, I see,
That's
with
right.
honors and...
Good research.
Yes. Well,
yeah.
I gotta know a little bit more of the inside scoop. So
yeah.
Amazing. Tell us about that experience coming into a new country and...
Yeah. First, it was really shocking going to a boarding school in San Marino. If you know anything about that part of the world, is definitely where, you know, the 1% of the 1% live.
Yeah.
And so certainly it was a massive shock
leaving,
you know, a place that was, you know, completely destroyed by the war, going to, you know, San Marino within a matter of weeks. But again, going back to the whole adaptability thing, you just sort of pick up where you left off and you sort of move on with it.
How did you feel leaving your country and your family? I mean, mm-hmm. and to go to something so incredibly drastic? What was that? I mean, were you scared? Were you nervous? Were you excited? A mix of everything?
Probably a mix of everything, but mostly excited for the opportunity. You know, I felt like I was given this incredible opportunity that many of my classmates or just friends didn't have. And so for me, yeah, it was a new start, but also an opportunity for me to make my dreams come true. My parents were very supportive because it meant that I would have the opportunity to get a really incredible education, which was always important for our family.
Sure.
So yeah, it was definitely difficult, but there was also a lot of, I was very naive and green and young and maybe at the moment didn't really recognize as much what was happening. Yeah. Now that when I think back, if my children were going through that, I would just, I don't know how I would feel if I would be okay letting my kids go to a completely different place, a new continent, not knowing anyone. Of course, I was boarding at the school, but still.
It's truly remarkable if you really think about it. I'm sure as you were going through it, it was one thing, but like you mentioned, reflecting back on that, it's like, wow, that's incredible that you did that, such a huge leap at such a young age on your own. So that's incredible.
Exciting.
So after graduating Occidental, you got your MBA from Harvard Business School?
Yes. Yeah, so first, my first stop after college was New York. I worked at Goldman Sachs. So I went to Wall Street. I had developed this interest in business and finance, and it felt like an amazing opportunity for me.
Sure.
So did that for a little over 2 years and then went on to business school in Boston at Harvard.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And how did you like that?
It was a really exciting opportunity for me. Again, I was really young. Mm-hmm. I was 24, one of the youngest people in my class. So definitely a little bit of not exactly knowing what was going on at the time, but I knew that I really wanted to get my MBA, and Harvard was always the school that you hear about in Europe. And so that's the only school I applied to. That's where I really wanted to go. And, you know, it happened. The experience was, one, incredible. I learned so much. But what was really powerful about being there was, one, the people that I met, the professors that I was able to create connections with. And it just provided me with so much access later in my career. It's just, you have this instant credibility that you get with a degree like that. And so it's been really helpful. And I feel really fortunate to have had the opportunity to do it.
Absolutely. Well, it seems to me, I mean, at least from my vantage point, it seems like there's this continual theme in your life of rising to the occasion. You know, it's like these opportunities that have presented themselves have never for naught. You've just gone after it and just risen to the occasion each and every time, which is just truly remarkable what you've accomplished at such a young age. And then from there, you went on to work after receiving your MBA.
And, that's right.
And you went to, was it McKinsey?
McKinsey, yeah. So at this time, as I was getting ready to graduate, my then fiance and I were deciding what we wanted to do and where we wanted to live. My husband, my now husband, then fiance, is a professor. He was he always knew he wanted to be in academia. He was he had completed his PhD, and we were lucky that he was able to get a postdoc at MIT so we could live together in Boston. We knew, though, that he was going into academia, and I knew that I had to be sort of flexible.
Sure.
I knew I loved this guy, and so I had to be flexible as well, and I wanted to be with him. And so McKinsey was kind of a really great next step because it enabled me to enrichen my skill set.
Sure.
You know, I had really done mostly finance before then, and I knew that I wasn't passionate about finance. I felt like I was okay at it. I did well. I had an opportunity to go back to Goldman afterwards, but really wanted to explore new things. And so McKinsey was just a really good opportunity for me to develop more general management skills, work on a lot of different strategy problems that companies had, which generally gives you a really good preparation for going into general management, which was ultimately my dream. And that was my focus in business school as well.
And then how did Lyft come about? Because obviously everyone knows what Lyft is now, but, you know, back a handful of years ago,
that's right,
you know, we didn't have ride sharing, and now it's, you know, the thing. So tell us about that.
Thank you. So, I spent about 2 years at McKinsey, and then we were getting ready to, you know, figure out where we would end up. And we ended up in Tempe because my husband got his dream job at ASU as a professor. They enabled him to get a great research platform.
So it was his career then that brought you from the East Coast back out here.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Precisely. And I started working here I'd worked for two different companies, most recently at Infusionsoft, mm-hmm. Which was a great experience. Really didn't want to leave, but was approached by Lyft multiple times. And, it was just one of those opportunities that at some point became really hard to turn down.
Sure.
Because it was kind of the future, and it was intriguing to do something like that in Arizona. And yeah, that's ultimately how it came about. They recruited me.
That is great. And yeah. Tell us about the experience, because there's obviously been a lot of changes in the industry and just so many things that have been from where Lyft started to where it is today. Yeah. I know you've been extremely instrumental in the growth, especially in this market. I mean, a record-breaking numbers, attributed back, of course, to the leadership being you. So, certainly kudos and congratulations on that. But tell us a little bit about what's happened with the growth of Lyft.
Yeah, thank you. I would definitely, I want to make sure it's absolutely, it's been a team effort in so many ways. But I also attribute a huge part of the success and the growth to the people of Phoenix and the people of Arizona now, really, because they've just been incredibly welcoming. They've appreciated what Lyft stands for, mm-hmm. How we like to do business, mm-hmm. how we like to give back, how we like to build community. Mm-hmm. And I think, the people of our state are just really generous people, mm-hmm. Kind, caring, thoughtful. And so I think that the company and its mission have really appealed, to them. And so that has made it easier for us. Mm-hmm. Other things to highlight have been, just numerous partnerships, innovative ideas to work with, whether it's nonprofits, sports teams, colleges, entertainment venues, you name it, right? Any sort of organization that ultimately serves the community and that there is a need to bring in a transportation element like Lyft, mm-hmm. Has been, a target for us, and it's worked out really well.
Well, and we all see as the public, so many creative collaborations and new and different ideas, which is not only cutting edge, but really fun for the consumer too, to just see
Precisely.
These unusual partnerships and great ideas. I think I just saw a post of yours perhaps that was about ride
Girl
in
Scouts.
Lyft this weekend and get a Girl Scout box of Girl Scout cookies. So how great. What creative ways to give back and connect.
Yeah, exactly. It's been, for us, it's just really important to, one, keep it fun, to keep it appealing and interesting. Mm-hmm. And again, we want to bring the Lyft brand to people's lives every day. And we want to do that through other, maybe either brands or just experiences that they see, at different parts of the year. So Girl Scouts is actually very timely because right now we are in Girl Scouts cookie sales mode.
Yes.
And that's why that partnership is so fun.
It's
And perfect. they've been a wonderful partner. I'm just so excited to be working with them.
That mm-hmm. is great. And now for you, I'm sure the journey to where you are today has not been, rose petals and unicorns. So what have been what's the biggest challenge you encountered or challenges you've encountered along the way? Because it's obviously never as easy as it always sounds once you had the level of success you've had.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's been a large number of things. Mm-hmm. One that I, always highlight is, when I worked at McKinsey, you're a consultant, right? You're a strategy consultant. You're brought in to solve a problem or a number of problems. And then, ultimately you're not there with the team to implement those changes. Mm-hmm. So I always wondered, am I really learning leadership in this job, mm-hmm. which I knew I wanted to be a leader. I wanted to help grow people and help impact, their professional lives. And, when I left McKinsey and started sort of working for a normal, company, I wasn't sure if that would be in the cards. I would always be sort of cornered as the analytics person who can do a lot of modeling and get a lot of great insights from the business, but was never sort of, at least not initially, given a lot of line operational leadership opportunities. Mm-hmm. And so I had to seek them out because mm-hmm. I felt like that was becoming a pattern because mm-hmm. I was good at it. And that's what a lot of companies need.
Yeah.
And so that was definitely one where I've had to be very thoughtful about maybe getting out of that path or trajectory.
So more being pigeonholed to your talents and mm-hmm. not really developing your leadership skills.
Skills, yeah. And so it took significant effort and deliberate asking, to be given those opportunities.
And so did you have a powerful mentor along the way, someone that you really was the one that took you under their wing? Or
there have definitely been a few where, you know, I think it's almost been like, hey, I do a lot for in this case, for their teams or for the various business units. So I want to be given opportunities to do the things that I really want to work on, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe while supporting you. So there have definitely been people who have seen that and given me opportunities. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of mentorship and maybe what has been helpful for me to ask for those things,
sure,
has been my father, who just always taught me, regardless where you are, regardless of whether we are in Kosovo or not, you know, that you really have to believe that a lot is doable, mm-hmm. you know, regardless of your maybe skills or education or upbringing, that hard work ultimately will always win at the end mm-hmm. of the day, and that hard work always wins versus talent. And so that has always been my mantra.
Sure.
So showing that you can do a lot, you can bring a lot of value, and you can inspire, that, you know, people will give you opportunities.
Sure. Sure. Absolutely. Well, I know he was a big, big, big influence. We've had that conversation offline on over coffee. So it's nice to have that angel looking over you now. So,
you,
I know you are also juggling all of this, running just a small little company like Lyft, while also being, obviously an amazing wife and phenomenal mother to your two girls. So tell us about them. First of all, they're two girls, correct?
Two girls,
and
yep.
How old are they now?
Six and a half and five.
Six and a half and five. Wonderful. Yeah. And what is that juggle like for you? How do you do it? I know I get the same question. It's just the working business mom and the kiddo. So how does that work for you? What's your secret?
That word is very precise. It's a juggle. Mm-hmm. It does not feel balanced always, mm-hmm. As much as I'd like to think that I am always trying to find ways to make it all work. It doesn't always work.
Right.
You know, I have an incredible partner in my husband who is just really involved with the girls, and helps tremendously. So that's, you know, a big help. But, you know, I also try to find ways in which I prioritize their things. A family dinner, which we do at least, you know, 5 to 6 nights a week, mm-hmm. During which I cook and we, you know, gather around the kitchen. And so there are some things that ultimately are non-negotiable for us as a family, that we will always do together to ensure that we are getting that quality time together. And then, you know, I will find ways to, you know, either wake up early or stay late, or work with my husband around, you know, my travel schedule or his travel schedule. My in-laws also live nearby, so that is also another help. And, you know, at times we also have to rely on outside help when things come about. But yeah, ultimately it's difficult. Mm-hmm. It's not easy. They're at an age when they need us.
They need
mom and
dad.
There.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. And it's interesting because, you know, in my line of work, it's something that I get asked a lot and hear a lot. Mm-hmm. How do you juggle it all? How do you make it all happen? And it's much to your point. I think there's this illusion of work-life balance that is this carrot that everyone's working towards when it really doesn't exist. You just thrive in the moment and do the best you can in those areas. And sometimes, you know, tragedy happens in your family or your children, you know, have something going on, as I'm sure Kyle knows as well. It's just your focus has to shift day by day, hour by hour, week by week, you know, depending on what's needed. So,
exactly. But we try to do, you know, family date nights where we go out for ice cream, or my husband and I, it's just difficult for us to step away, during a weekend or things like that. So we'll do lunch dates sometimes, you know,
you get creative.
Or morning coffee dates, you know, things like that when, it may not seem like a normal thing, but we make it work.
Yep. And normal's overrated anyway. You got to get creative. Sometimes a morning coffee date is more fun. It's just different. So
You're more alert.
Yeah, exactly. The caffeine helps. Wine sedates you too much. I love it. So with Lyft now today, obviously tremendous growth. It's happened obviously in Phoenix and other markets.
Yes.
What's the vision moving forward? Where do you see it going?
Yeah, you know, our goal is to continue to grow and grow fast. Our goal is to be the majority player here, but also everywhere in the U.S. And I strongly believe that we will get there and that we will get there fast, just based on the trajectory we've had, but also the way that we approach operating in our markets. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the vision for us is to continue to focus on delivering an incredible passenger and driver experience, you know, to a point where brand really matters, right?
Sure.
If they have two choices and, you know, pricing is the same or similar and, you know, the service levels are, or what we call ETAs, right? Mm-hmm. The time between, you know, when you call a Lyft and when it arrives is the same between the two providers, then, you know, ultimately the consumers will choose based on the experience, how they are treated, what the company stands for. And so we're very, very focused on that. Mm-hmm. It's just really important and it's, you know, core in the DNA of our company.
Right. Right. Well, it definitely shines through from the top down. And, you know,
exactly.
Every experience that I know myself and family and friends, you know, have always talked about that, how there is that differentiating factor that does stand out from a consumer perspective. So, you know, like
Thank
I said,
you.
Kudos to you and your team for creating this measurably different experience.
Thank and, you. That means a lot.
Yeah, it's phenomenal. And so there's something fun that I love to do.
Please.
Each time that we do a show, there is a TV show. It was a talk show actually based out in France. And you may be familiar with it, but there are these questions that the host of that show asked.
Okay.
And they have been translated into a TV show that aired for many years here. I don't know if it still does, called Inside the Actor's Studio. And
okay.
There are these same questions that James Lipton would always ask his guests,
okay.
All these different movie stars, actors, actresses. Mm-hmm. And I just thought, isn't it a fun thing to ask business leaders these questions to
Love
find
it.
Out your true gut instincts okay. on these questions. So Kyle's getting a little bit of a preview, but it's okay. There's no cheating or getting answers ahead of time. So if it's okay with you, Miss Drenna, I'm going to ask you these same
Sounds
fun questions.
Fun.
So Drenna, what is your favorite word?
Humility. Or yeah, humility.
Humility.
Yeah.
Love it. So what is your least favorite word?
Tired.
And I wish everyone could see your face right now because it's squished up and she's thinking hard, like, what is that? What is it for me? I love it. Tired. Yeah. And you hear that one a few times, huh?
I'm worried about re-listening this and feeling like these were terrible choices.
There's no terrible choices. If it's your real answer, that's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it. So what turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
The ability to impact people in a positive way.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be my family, friends, not just, you know, professionally.
Sure, sure. I love it. So then what turns you off?
Excuses that something cannot be done or achieved.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a common theme among people around this, the studio.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That can't word. I love it. So this is internet radio. So I can ask this question.
Please.
What is your favorite curse word? She doesn't want to say it.
DS word.
I had the feeling we weren't going to get the actual word. You're such a good mom and leader. You're like, I'm not going to curse. Okay. Okay. It happens once in a while, right? Once in a blue moon.
Of course it does. More than I'd like to admit.
So, Drenna, what sound or noise do you love?
The sound of my Lyft arriving.
That's perfect. That's perfect. So what sound or noise do you hate?
My children crying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's a tough one. What profession other than your own would you want to attempt?
So my brother and sister are both physicians, and I thought forever that I was going to go in the medical field
really?
As well.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Did you have an area of interest in medicine?
Yeah. I think something around women's health.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. Do you think that'll ever happen? Do you think that's something that you'd ever want to work towards?
Probably late for me to be a physician, mm-hmm. but certainly I currently, you know, try to support causes around that area, but certainly
yes.
in the future, I would love to do a lot more in that area because
yeah.
I feel like women's health, women's education are just one of the most empowering ways in which, you know, we as a society can grow and improve and
Well, and I know
prosper.
You do so much volunteer work and you know, reading it between junior achievement and so
mm-hmm.
much with girls in STEM and
yeah.
so many different areas that you have passions around. So
right.
It's interesting to know though, medicine. So
yeah.
interesting. I love it. So what profession would you not like to do?
Accounting.
Not a number cruncher.
It's not. I'm actually quite the number cruncher. But for me, number crunching in the form that it leads to a lot of insights and findings and that can be action oriented are really interesting. Actually, I'm very much a numbers oriented person. It's just accounting for the sake of accounting to me is just really,
too monotonous.
Yeah.
I love it. And if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
You know, you have, hopefully what I will hear is that I have done my part to, you know, impact people's lives and help my daughters become, you know, healthy, happy, and, you know, thriving individuals. Yeah. And that I have had the opportunity to see a lot of the world, a lot more than I've seen so far.
Yeah. Well, I know that you are not only working towards that, you are already achieving that and making a huge impact in those two girls' lives.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, so if people want to learn more about you or Lyft, how do they best find you?
Sure. So on LinkedIn, just Drena Kusari. And I definitely do not discriminate. I think I'm one of the people who accepts all requests. Not sure if that's a good thing, but LinkedIn and then Instagram, Drena Kusari, at Drena Kusari.
Perfect. Yeah. Perfect. Well, I thank you so much for these fun answers. And as we transition to Kyle, do you have some time to stay with us in the studio?
Of course, absolutely.
And you two know each other.
We do.
Is pretty fun. There's a fun little backstory there because Lyft was originally housed within Kyle's creation, which is Mac 6, a co-working space that is definitely different than the norm. So it's fun that you both were able to be here on the same day. So. Yeah.
For
sure. It was, I love hearing the story and just, you know, we know each other going back, but getting to hear just the backstory of it all is, it's amazing.
It's pretty phenomenal. It's pretty phenomenal what you've achieved.
Thank
Absolutely.
You.
And you, my friend, what you've achieved. Wow. Mac 6. Wow. Look at you.
Yeah.
and this was 2011 is when you co-created this.
2011. Yes. We started something.
Yeah.
It's turned into what it is today.
And so tell us, give us the backstory if you would. So you're from here originally?
I was born in Phoenix.
Born in Phoenix.
Moved to the Philippines when I was 7 for a year. Moved to Canada from there for 4 years. Wow. And then I've been in Arizona the rest of my life.
And was that based on your dad's? I know your dad's an engineer and was in mining. Is that what
deep,
took you?
Deep underground mining engineering. So, we went all over the place for that and had a good time.
Wow. And what was that experience like? Did you love being overseas or how was that as a child?
I did. And, you know, being 7, so it's a long time ago. I remember quite a bit of it. I'd love to go back now and just see the food, the culture, the things that I remember and just sort of re-ingrain myself in that.
Sure.
I go back to Canada infrequently, but my parents go up there during the summers and go hang out and I still have friends up there and it's closer to here, but it's very different.
Yeah. Yeah. That's nice that you have the opportunity to go back and visit and see folks. And so you grew up then after those experiences, you were here in Phoenix and went to high school and college locally or?
Yep. Went to high school in Ahwatukee and then went to University of Arizona in Tucson.
Okay.
So still in Arizona. But thanks.
Just kidding. Sun Devils. That's not, I had to go there. So U of A. And then what did you study at U of A?
So originally architecture for a year and that wasn't for me and moved on to marketing and got my degree in that.
Wonderful. And out of college, where did you set your sights?
So there was a couple of jobs out of college for large and then a very small for-profit company. Mm-hmm. And then most recently, prior to what I'm doing now, was working for a very large nonprofit, the Leukemia Lymphoma Society, which is really created a lot of the mindset of what's gone into Mac 6 and kind of how we do business.
Awesome. Awesome. So tell me about Mac 6, because I know that this is it's not just a career or a building. There's a lot of passion inside those walls. So it's very unique. So share with me a little bit about how this all came to be.
Sure. So from the very beginning, I jokingly say that I caught the last year of millennial. So I went and did my time with the nonprofit and loved the purpose side of it and what we stood for and what we were getting people to get engaged with and you know, what that was really doing for the people that are dealing with these issues. It became very frustrating at the same time to see these sort of constraints that a lot of nonprofits put themselves through or are held to. Mm-hmm. And so I was looking for an exit and a way to do something where you could kind of combine the heart of the nonprofit and the horsepower of a for-profit business. And so in talking with my dad, we co-founded Mac 6 together. Mm-hmm. And we had done some real estate stuff in the past, but wanted to get into investing into early stage businesses.
Right.
So we started having these conversations of who do we want to put money into? Mm-hmm. Do we think we'll be successful? Do we want to encourage success? And so we had a lot of this conversation around purpose-driven, long road of where they're going to eventually hit these financial gains that are going to come back for the investment. But we sort of stumbled onto this articulation of conscious capitalism, mm-hmm. which has really become the lens that we look through and how we decide anything that we're going to do with business. Where are we putting our money? How are we running our own business? And we originally started out as a business incubator then. Mm-hmm. So we had physical space where we could house these companies that we were working with. We were investing in these early stage companies. We're working with them, all kinds of help, financial, legal, sales, whatever it was, through this framework of conscious capitalism. Mm-hmm. Over time, what we learned, and there's a lot of lip service about this, but not a ton getting done to really engage and look at the numbers, what's really there, was that it's the team that matters all the time. Mm-hmm. That's what's going to make a company successful. We have these conversations across the table of sort of a gut feel. Do mm-hmm. I think that you're the right person to be sitting in that seat? And so we started really focusing on that and saying, all right, we're not just going to have a gut feel. We're putting real money at stake. There's a lot at risk here. We want these people to be creating value and extending their reach through being a for-profit and doing this way. So we started to find assessments and tools to work towards really creating a strong team and building that. And so we just lopped off kind of everything else we were doing. There are people that are great at financial planning and sales plans and marketing and whatever it was. If we get a really strong team together where everybody's in the right role, put the whatever plan in front of them and they'll implement. They'll do a great job. Mm-hmm. And so we're not an incubator in quotes anymore. We were a leadership academy for high performing teams. So that really was just niche focus on building strong teams. Through that work, we found that, okay, early stage companies know they need this help because they've just hit a ceiling. They either need financial help, they know they need outside guidance, even if they've been there, done it before. Mm-hmm. But that later stage businesses have a lot of the same issues, just at a different scale. Mm-hmm. It's all people issues. It's just different people issues.
Right.
So we still do the early stage investing and working with early stage companies. And now we work with later stage businesses as well, developing culture, high performing teams, leadership training externally from our spaces as well. And so as we made that shift at the same time, we had extra capacity in our buildings, in the co-working space of, we wanted this really strong, vibrant, just community feel of what's there. And we don't have enough people to really get there. Mm-hmm. And so that is when the co-working model started to come in and we could bring in a Lyft or other company, you know, solopreneurs or whoever can be a part of that space to really provide value, the people capital part of that, to mm-hmm. really just be a part of that community. Mm-hmm. Similarly, so we have a manufacturing building right up the road, 38,000 square feet. And it's the same there where it's really just, hey, I need to get out of my garage. I can't afford an 8-year lease on 10,000 mm-hmm. square feet. I need flexibility, but I also want to be a part of this community as I'm growing my company. And so there's been effort from us to create that, but it's gotten to a place now where we've sort of hit the tipping point of where those companies are creating it themselves. And mm-hmm. it's been really, really cool to see just these thriving communities. They're working with one another, both professionally and personally, and just, hey, I've done this, I've experienced this, you don't have to go through that. And mm-hmm. so we've gotten to this really cool place with the real estate mm-hmm. side of what we do, where it's very much what we wanted, which is this relationship-driven real estate and not transactional-driven mm-hmm. real estate.
Yeah. Yep. And if I may add something, just from our experience at Lyft, being at Mac 6 for quite some time, we actually found multiple a number of the companies that were there or the various entrepreneurs, we actually were able to do partnerships with them.
Oh, wow.
Or they connected us with other, you know, companies or just partnership opportunities. So it was really lovely to have that kind of an environment and community.
Well, and it definitely, you know, you step into Mac 6 and there's a different feel. It's so collaborative and it is so all about the people. And from my understanding too, you really vet who's a part of this culture. It's not just, hey, I need some space. Will you rent me some? It's so different than that.
We do. We do. And we're pulling that more into all of the spaces side of what we do. So even the commercial quiet occupancy. Mm-hmm. For the co-working space and the co-manufacturing space, at least for now, we have a application. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of low bar where you're at least willing to provide like, hey, this is important to me. I'm at least willing to have these conversations. Mm-hmm. I want to be a part of a space like this and not just, I want to try and drill you down on the rent and I'll just do my thing here.
Right.
And so
it's not transactional. It's really a partnership and a doing business for this social good and betterment of all feel.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I'll say with having Lyft in there or, you know, any company that we see just having this great growth. Mm-hmm. And it's weird to say, but from a relationship perspective, it's a huge win for us. Mm-hmm. When you guys move out and into your own space. Because it means that there was the right flexibility and everything to get you to the point where we're not taking credit for that, but that you had a place where you could do that.
Absolutely.
So when we get to a place where we've had a number of companies outgrow us and it's just, we'll figure it out from the business side, mm-hmm. but it's a huge win for us to be able to have that type of space.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Well, and to me, it almost feels like, you know, if you think about even just growing up as a child and a teenager and you have your home and you feel comforted and nurtured and you can grow there. And then that time when it is time to go off to college or go off to start your career, you know, your parents are cheering you on as you exit to step into that next level of greatness. So it is very much this home and nurturing atmosphere of, you know, going for your dreams and going for it in a big, passionate, bold way. And I love that about the culture that you know, have created there.
It's fun. I mean, it's funny. I don't have my MBA traditionally, but I say this is probably even more expensive MBA that we've gone through than at Harvard. but because I get to learn from all these people that are having these similar but different experiences and trying things and failing and being supported by this community and trying again until they see success. And inevitably, we've seen company after company and individual leader after leader have success. And it's awesome to see.
That's wonderful. That's wonderful. Now, you work very closely with your father. And so how is that dynamic working with family?
They tell you never to do it. And it's been great.
Good. Well, that's wonderful.
So we co-founded the business together and we had a conversation months before. And it was not just he and I, but my parents and I and my sister. And it's just, there's two relationships here. Mm-hmm. And so if anything ever goes down with the business relationship where it's just we're at an impasse and we can't get through it, we're calling it quits. We're done with that. And the family relationship is something different. And so there can be times where it's, you know, we have interesting conversations and we're wearing different hats, but it's been great. He's gotten to do something that he calls this his playground now. He retired in 2008 in quotes very much and gets to do this now. And he's gotten to a point now where he's effectively exited an operational role of the business where he gets to come in and work on projects or work with the invested companies and do the things that he really loves. And we've worked through 7+ years of getting to this place where the leadership team is able to really take this on and we're still taking it on and figuring it out. But it's been awesome experience.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. And both highly involved, you mentioned it briefly, but conscious capitalism. Tell us about conscious capitalism for those that don't know.
Sure. So I have some interesting stuff to tell you on this, actually.
Okay.
So conscious capitalism in general started, so it was coined by a man named Muhammad Yunus, who also is kind of the grandfather of, what's it called, microfunding, and that concept. And he didn't really do much with it other than sort of throw this lob out of this term and this concept. And it was picked up years later by Raj Sisodia, who's a professor at Babson. And he really started bringing this concept and this ideology of conscious capitalism into school environment, teaching it in classes. More recently, in the last 5-6 years or so, it's incorporated. There's a international organization whose goal is to get this message out to business leaders. And really, I think a lot of the energy behind it is, I'll tell you the four tenets and how it's articulated, but it's this sort of backlash to this story that capitalism is bad. And so it's really just a rearticulation of what capitalism stands for and what it should be and the great value that it's created for the world and all sorts of people. I mean, pulled more people out of poverty than any other socioeconomic system in the last 200 years. And so it's telling that story and highlighting not the companies that you hear on the news and these negative stories about, but who are great companies doing great things who still have issues, mm-hmm. but are deciding to actively and consciously aware, make change for being better for everyone they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, you know, being an active part of this community of conscious capitalism, the companies that align and get it and think of their people first, think of the end user. It's not about me. It's not about my gain and my company, but this, how do we all win together? And how do I provide that level of service and execution and passion and commitment to you, the person across the table, that is so refreshing. It's so refreshing.
It's awesome. It's awesome to have these conversations because there are companies that are trying to do good things. But when you're in a conversation with people who are mm-hmm. all trying to do the same sort of thing with their business, to even expand your mind to who is the person across the table. And so if I'm traditional quarterly returns and I'm thinking the person across the table is always the shareholder, mm-hmm. then it's going to create potential negative ramifications for the other people across the table. Like, so my customers, or am I thinking about my vendors or even the community, and how do I think about the community? And so to really expand people's thought process about this and how they create a greater good while the shareholders are still important, and we're creating a greater economic return at the same time by doing all these things, extending the reach of the good that we can do, therefore making more money to extend the reach. And it's this good cyclical, as opposed to, hey, you win short term, everyone else is out in the long run.
Right, right. And it's interesting because these types of businesses and business leaders that think this way are stepping up more and more now. It's almost this movement that's happened. You know, in my line of work, you know, in leadership development, it's interesting because not every company believes in or thinks the way that we think, and has this mindset of, you know, we invest in our people, we develop our people, we want them happier at work so they're happier at home, and happier at home so they're happy at work. So when you find this symbiotic relationship, when you've got these leaders that say, this is our culture, this is who we are, this is how we be, if you will, it's amazing the things that happen. And I know there's been so many collaborative partnerships and things just from this great work of conscious capitalism that's you know, really transforming Phoenix for sure.
Well, it's fun to see as it grows from the international group. And then we have a local chapter here, mm-hmm. Here focused on education and bringing this into schools. So business schools teaching this, mm-hmm. instead of just ethics in a silo. And then you go to economics and it's, well, that's over there.
Yeah.
How do we holistically talk about business? What's been really fun to see though is the number of business leaders who say, oh, like, this isn't new. This is how I do business.
Right.
They're conscious capitalists.
Right. Right.
And so to just give them a mouthpiece and a ability to just collectively get together and say, this is business. This is how we do business. And so, yeah, there are people out there doing bad things, mm-hmm. but let's point out the collective good of what all of we are doing, yeah, as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And for you, you know, getting into obviously owning your own company and working with so many phenomenal leaders throughout the course of building your company, what were some of the best pieces of advice, or was there a piece of advice that has really been the thing that you've hung your hat on as, wow, that was instrumental in my development?
Every day. Yeah. I mean, truly, every day is a learning experience. And it's really, if as an entrepreneur, as a business leader of any kind, if you're not realizing that the opportunities that you have to learn, whether through great opportunities that happen or negative experiences that you had every day, you're not doing a great job. You really need to be learning all the time. I think the one, and it's still just the one big thing in the shift we made to focus on teams and how important that people side of it really is, mm-hmm. and working on that specific piece of it, that realization shifted everything that we do in business. And it really just shifted how I think about things. And mm-hmm. so if you're having an issue with business, is it a symptom that you're recognizing, or is it the real issue? And so many times people are focusing on, we're hitting a cash flow issue, we have this customer that's upset, or whatever it is. And hey, that's the issue, as opposed to peeling back the onion. And it really, a lot of times, is a people issue that we mm-hmm. can deal with from that way, and really give us a way to effectively deal with the issue for all time and just make ourselves so much stronger going forward through our people.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, focus on people is where it is. Absolutely. Well, I want to jump into these questions because I know everybody loves to hear these phenomenal answers. So, Mr. Kyle, if you will, what is your favorite word?
Love.
Aw, I love love. I love that. Love it. What is your least favorite word?
Bored.
Oh, so tired and bored. And I'm sure the, those are just the epitome of the two of you, right?
I'm already thinking of changing my words.
Oh. Drenna's having word remorse.
Yes.
I love it. I love it. So for you, Kyle, what turns you on creatively, spiritually, or emotionally?
I guess the best way I can say this is exploration. Okay. And so when there's a big new idea or opportunity to really just get into a room or whatever and be able to be in a place to just pour out ideas and go yeah. through that process.
You are such a creative in that way. Yeah. It's magical to watch just the snippets that I have seen. It's phenomenal. So love it. And what turns you off?
Negativity.
Pretty standard.
Pessimism.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything. Yeah. Back to that sort of can't or no or
yes.
won't or
yes.
yeah. So how about you? What's your favorite curse word?
Okay. So I'll actually say it. I'm speaking tomorrow on a panel at Phoenix Startup Week for something called Founder Fuck Ups. And that's my favorite one.
Yeah, that's so a good, good one. That's a good one. And sometimes I know, and Drenna, you're so polite and so charming and delightful that, you know, we're not going to necessarily air the word. But you know what? There are those moments that, especially as entrepreneurs, business leaders, people that have been through the trenches, there are just those moments where it's like, you got to let it fly. And there's just no other word that can really
for
encompass
sure.
it quite the same way. It does feel good. It does feel good. For Kyle, for you, what sound or noise do you love?
This is a funny one, but I have this distinct memory of being a kid and both my parents, but using a hairdryer in the morning, and I'd fall asleep on the bath mat, like to that sound. And still to this day, like if I can't sleep, it's like a white noise thing, like that high pitch. It should be annoying, but I love it.
That is great. See, I love it. Isn't it
yeah.
unbelievable? I love the answers. How cool is that? So a hairdryer.
Hairdryer.
I love it. Yeah. And your least favorite sound? Which one do you hate?
Hate the sound of styrofoam rubbing against styrofoam.
Oh my God, I love it. I love it. That's great. That's great. Perfect. What profession other than your own would you like to get into?
Well, I guess I'd pick a hobby that I have that I'd just love to have more time to do. Mm-hmm. But woodworking.
Okay.
And I do it just for fun now. And it's not great work, but it's more artistic than functional.
Okay.
But I love to do it. And I just think it'd be fun to get a lot better at that.
Was that something you just learn on your own, or is that something your dad taught you or family? Or?
So the last year in college, one of my roommates, he grew up in a family business that built high-end children's furniture.
Oh, okay.
And so I learned quite a bit from him that year and then just kept learning over time.
Did you major in woodworking?
I secretly majored in woodworking.
Yeah. You got a BA in woodworking and we just didn't know. I love it. So what profession would you not like to do?
Accounting's a good one, but...
She's like, she stole my thunder.
Anything where I'd have to be by myself all the time.
Yeah. Way too much of a people person.
Yeah. Yeah.
So are you more extroverted or introverted, would you say?
From the definition, I'm an introvert.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I love going up on stage in front of doesn't matter how many people.
With your red pants.
And my red pants.
Yeah, always.
We should
red
hang
pants.
Out. Yeah. Maybe you can help me with that.
But if I can't get into a dark room by myself for a little bit of time and just re-energize after, then I'm a mess.
Got it. Yeah. Interesting. Wow. Very interesting. Okay. So nothing where you have to be by yourself.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. And if heaven exists, what would you like to hear God say when you arrive at the pearly gates?
I had some time to think about this.
Yeah. Cheater.
Whew, you made it.
Yeah. You got here.
That's a good one.
That's a good one. That is a good one. And I'm going to give you guys a bonus question. Okay. So if you had to describe yourself, I'll start with you, Kyle. If you had to describe yourself in three words, how would you describe yourself? See, I'm not giving him time to think this time. I'm giving you the advantage, Drenna.
Purpose, love, and tenacious.
Ooh, I like that. Purpose, love, and tenacious or tenacity.
Tenacity.
Awesome. Awesome. I think your kiddos learn a lot from you with that, with all three of them.
I learn a lot from them.
They are darling, I must say, as you well know, and you and Samantha both know, I'm in love with your two children, and my daughters are in love with your two children. So we need to have some big play date of little conscious
sure.
capitalist children or something. I don't know. It would be great. It would be great. They're going to rule the world. I'm certain of it. How about you, Drenna? What would you, what three words would you come up with?
Empathetic, humble, and hardworking.
That I can't think of three words that more succinctly describe you.
Oh, thank you.
Those are beautiful. Perfect. Thanks. Perfect. I love it. And Kyle, if our listeners want to learn more about Mac 6, you know, just the space and all of that, and then of course, conscious capitalism, can you share how to best get in touch with you or them?
Mac6.com. You could find me on LinkedIn, Kyle McIntosh. Conscious Capitalism, AZ.com. And okay. I'll say one more thing. Mm-hmm. ConsciousCapitalism.org is the international organization, mm-hmm. and their national conference just got announced is coming to Phoenix next year in April.
Really? Which is a huge deal. I did hear that last night. It's so exciting. So exciting. Yes, I was privileged enough to attend the Summon Substance event, and we were able to be a sponsor. And I will tell you, that was absolutely mind-blowing event. So for all listeners, Summon Substance, when it comes up, is definitely one to attend as well. It's remarkable. And so I keep saying final question, but then I get excited and I think of something else. So it's the Leadership Lowdown. So the lowdown, what is the one piece of advice that you would each give to our aspiring leaders or already successful, amazing leaders out there? What's that one piece of advice that you would give? I'll start with you, Drenna.
Be long-term minded, mm-hmm. in that the current state does not define you in any way, and that your current abilities don't mean that those will be your forever abilities. And so believe on the fact that a lot is possible, and basically keep a very big picture mind frame.
I love it. I love it. It's big. I share a lot. The past does not equal the future. And I think there's such a big part of getting hung up in the story of, mm-hmm. that's the way it is, or that's what happened, or that's who I was. So that's who I need to continue to be. And that evolution. That's a great one.
Yeah. I'm just really big on an abundance time type of mindset.
Yep.
It's really defined my path and what's helped me.
It most certainly has.
Be
absolutely
here.
Well, mm-hmm. thank you. And thank you so much for being here today.
Of course,
and
my pleasure.
Kyle, how about you? What's the lowdown for you, the Leadership Lowdown nugget you would leave?
I love that one. So since I have to say something different, I think to the greatest extent that you can find ways to know yourself, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. find ways to find your blind spots, mm-hmm. and open up your eyes to what you're really great at, what your passion is, what you're potentially not great at and don't want to do, or never, you know, you're meant here to really do something that you love, mm-hmm. and surround yourself with people who are great at the other things and give you the best opportunity to do the work
Absolutely.
You love while supporting them, and just collectively be a great team.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Henry Ford, I know in the book Think and Grow Rich, talked about his secret to success being that he just surrounded himself with people that are brighter than him in mm-hmm. all of those other areas. And when, to your point, when you allow yourself to shine in those areas of your greatness and your biggest impact and magnitude, and have the support of people that are, you know, serving in their area of brilliance, it's like, wow, what you can accomplish together is amazing. So I thank you both so much. I know that our listeners took so many wonderful bits of information and things that they can apply and think about moving forward. So thank you for being so, so real and open with us today and being a part of the show.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. And again, you've been listening to Leadership Lowdown, hosted by me, Jody Lowe, and powered by You and Improved. And if you're not familiar with You and Improved, our purpose is to align a company's purpose with its people. So we provide experiential training classes, corporate training, inspirational speaking, and our goal is really to just teach people how to build strong teams, bridge communication, and really create trust and accountability in the workplace and at home. And that's really what leads to that higher retention and more profitability. So to learn more, you can visit youandimproved.com, spelled the letter U, the word and, A-N-D, improved.com. And for all of you listening, thank you for being a part of the Leadership Lowdown. Thank you to our guests, Drenna and Kyle, and we look forward to talking to you soon.